Know Thine Enemy, Part 5. Christianity is under attack, as we have stated and documented in the previous four messages. Let me give you another quote, though, concerning this. Approximately 20 years ago, Elton Trueblood made the prediction that committed Christians by the end of the century would be, quote, a conscious minority surrounded by a militant and arrogant paganism, end quote. Now, I don't think there's probably any question for anybody who's had their eyes open at all to what's going on in America today and in the world today. I don't think anyone would probably take that to task. Matter of fact, I think that's probably said rather lightly. I think we're not just being surrounded by a paganism. We're being surrounded by a paganism that is not just surrounding us, but that is already in the midst of destroying us, destroying Christianity at every turn that they can, and we're still 10 years yet from the turn of the century. Well, Elton Trueblood certainly knew even 20 years ago that the fact that something was coming on in America, and I don't think it was all that evident. I think it's definitely been escalated in the last 5 to 10 years. Either that, or my eyes are just becoming open to the fact of that. You know, really, no one, based on all the things that we have said in the past four messages, proving that very statement that Christianity is under attack, nobody, absolutely nobody, should be taken by surprise by that statement. For in First John chapter 3 and verse 13, it tells us, it says, "Do not marvel, brethren, if the world hates you." You know, God, through the inspiration given to John, tells us, don't be surprised at the fact if the world hates you. And by the way, the word world there in the Greek is cosmos. What do we usually think of when we think of cosmos? Well, we think of the earth itself, the world. That's the usual understanding of that word. But let me ask you, does the earth have the capacity or the ability to hate? And it's not talking about the cosmos in that sense. Talking about the world order. Let me just add that in, because that's really probably how it should be translated. It says, "Do not marvel, brethren, if the world order hates you." And that's what we're talking about in this series of messages. Turn with me for further proof of the fact, and further proof that we shouldn't be surprised by the fact that we're being hated as Christians and being attacked. Turn with me to Ezekiel chapter 35. Ezekiel chapter 35, and I want to begin by reading the first three verses. Listen to what this says. It says, "Moreover, the word of Yahweh came to me," Ezekiel, of course, "saying, Son of man, set your face against Mount Seir and prophesy against it." Now, Mount Seir is identified in verse 15 as being all Edom. Mount Seir and Edom are one and the same thing, or same people. Mount Seir is not a mountain. He wasn't to set his face against a mountain. Just like cosmos isn't the actual world or earth in 1 John 3, Mount Seir is not a literal mountain. Mount Seir was the residence of Edom at this time, the people of Edom. And it identifies very clearly here in verse 15 and in other places in Ezekiel that Mount Seir is Edom. Again, it says, verse 2, "Son of man, set your face against Mount Seir," or Edom, "and prophesy against it, and say to it, Thus says the Lord Yahweh, Behold, I am against you, Mount Seir, and I will stretch out my hand against you, and I will make you a desolation and a waste." Why would God have such a problem with this place called Mount Seir, or the people of Mount Seir, known as Edom? Well, the Scripture tells us why. We find the answer to that in verse 5. He says, "Because you have had..." Who's he speaking to? He's speaking, "I'm against you, Mount Seir, I'm against you, Edom, because you, Edom, have had everlasting enmity." What's enmity? It's hatred. "Because you have had everlasting enmity and have delivered the sons of Israel to the power of the sword at the time of their calamity, at the time of the punishment of the end." Now notice he says that they have everlasting hatred toward the sons of Israel. Now somebody's probably going to ask, well, what in the world does God setting his face against Edom or Mount Seir have to do with Christianity being hated today? Well, think about this. Esau hated Jacob, did he not? whether you want to determine it was rightful hatred or not, whether it was justified hatred or not, really isn't the question. But Esau hated his brother Jacob, did he not? He certainly did. And Edom, according to this passage, Edom, who are the descendants of Esau, have everlasting hatred toward Israel, the descendants of Jacob. In other words, that hatred of Esau has continued. Esau's hatred toward Jacob has continued in their descendants. Edom, the descendants of Esau, has an everlasting hatred toward Israel, the descendants of Jacob. And Judaism, the religion of modern day Edom, hates Christianity. And it cannot be denied that Christianity is a predominant Israelite religion. That cannot be contested. Edom hates Christianity. Why? Because Christianity is Israelite in nature. Here in Ezekiel, God through Ezekiel says that Esau had an everlasting hatred toward Israel. And it's being carried on. It started with Esau and Jacob, carried on through his descendants in the time of the Old Testament. It's being carried on today by Edom's or Judaism's hatred of Christianity today. It shouldn't surprise us that we are hated. And as the time draws nearer to the end, I think we'll obviously see an increase in that. Christians certainly have enemies, as we have, again, documented, I think, so well in the previous four messages. But few realize it or want to face the fact of it, if they do. What's worse, only a small minority seem to be able to correctly identify who the enemy is. Even if they recognize Christianity has enemies, there seem to be very few who can correctly identify that enemy. And what's even worse than that is that fewer yet are brave enough to expose them when they can. You know, Rockwell said, quote, "How can you expect to defeat the enemy if you're afraid to even name him?" You think about that. How can you expect to defeat the enemy if you're afraid to even name him? You know, the obvious thing is if nobody's willing to name the enemy, then nobody's going to know who the enemy is that they're supposed to be fighting. That's the obvious. But think about this. If you're afraid to even name the enemy, you're certainly not going to be willing to engage him in battle. If you're afraid to even just let your voice come out and say, "This is the enemy." It's sad when the soldiers of Christ, and I have to put quotes around that, when the soldiers of Christ, I have to laugh at it, are unwilling to name the enemies of Christ. Certainly not soldiers at all. You know, in this series of messages, we are not only identifying the enemy of Christianity, but also providing documentation to prove the truth of what Henry Ford said back in his day. Let me read that again. I've read it a couple times previous, but since it's been two or three weeks since we've been in this series, let me read it once again. We want to name who the enemy is. We have, and we're going to continue to do so. But through this series of messages, we're also wanting to see if Henry Ford Sr.'s statement concerning the Jewish power in America should certainly be validated or not. He says, "It is rather surprising, is it not, that whichever way you turn to trace the harmful streams of influence that flow through society, you come upon a group of Jews. In sports corruption, a group of Jews. In exploitative finance, a group of Jews. In theatrical degeneracy, a group of Jews. In liquor propaganda, a group of Jews. In control of national war policies, a group of Jews. Absolutely dominating the wireless communications of the world, a group of Jews. The menace of the movies, a group of Jews. In control of the press through business and financial pressure, a group of Jews. War profiteers, 80% of them, Jews. The miasma of so-called popular music, which combines weak-mindedness with every suggestion of lewdness, Jews. And organizers of active opposition to Christian laws and customs, again Jews. It is time to show that the cry of bigot is raised mostly by bigots. There is a religious prejudice in this country. There is, indeed, a religious persecution. There is a forcible shoving aside of the religious liberties of a majority of the people And this prejudice and persecution and use of force is Jewish and nothing but Jewish, end quote. The last two messages, previous to this one, we documented that behind communism, we find Jewish brains, Jewish action, and Jewish finance. Now, we want to move on to another arena, and what we're doing is we're looking again to see if behind all the corruption in America, if at least behind the majority of them, if it's true indeed, is there Jewish brains and Jewish action behind most of what's going on in these areas of vice and corruption. But before moving on to another area, I believe that there's something that I need to point out at this time concerning communism before we leave that. Because I can just, again, hear somebody saying, Church, had you've proven, based on what I shared in the last two messages, you've proven that Judaism, Jewish Zionism, international Zionism, or however you want to state it, it was behind the Bolshevik revolution in its inception. But what about now? Are there still the Jews involved? And I've heard on the radio, I've heard different talk show hosts say, that may have been the case. They cannot deny the facts that I shared with you in the last two messages. They cannot deny those facts. They don't even try to. But what they try to do is to say, yeah, but that's all changed. And there are no longer Jews that are involved in communism today. Is that the case? Well, in light of that, in light of knowing that that has been and certainly could be raised again as after the last two messages, I want to share with you the 1983 list of, or share with you from the 1983 list of communist rulers. Now, I wish I had a 1989 list. I don't, but I think this is recent enough to prove the point. This list of communist rulers shows the names of the 65 top leaders of the communist leaders 6 years ago. Of these 65 leaders of communism 6 years ago, keep in mind, 60 were Jews who changed their names to conceal their identity. 60 out of 65, 6 years ago, of the top 65 Jewish leaders, or communist leaders, were Jews. Over 90% of the communist leaders in the Politburo, the KGB, the diplomatic corps, the GRU, and the general staff and other top government positions are Jewish. Now, let me just share a few of the names that probably you'll recognize. How about Yuri Andropov, former Prime Minister and President of Russia, whose real name was Lieberman? Or how about Andrei Gromyko, whose real last name was Katz, K-A-T-Z? Or how about Dmitry Ustinov, the Minister of Defense, whose real name is Albright? And Michael Suslov, the powerful leader in the Politburo, whose real name is Zeus. And also Alexander Dobrynin, ambassador to the U.S., whose real name is Sonenshine. No question, communism was and is Jewish. And no one can debate that. Now, I felt, again, I needed to share that before moving on. But let's move on. Let's look at another area. Let's look at the area of masonry. You know, masonry is often proclaimed today. You hear it in different people who that's their thing, is to deal with masonry. And you often hear these people proclaiming that masonry is Christianity's worst enemy. Well, I ask, why? Why would people make such a statement? That masonry is Christianity's worst enemy, especially in light of the fact that many Masons consider themselves Christians. And in light of the many benevolent community activities that local Masons involve themselves in. You know, why is it that somebody, in light of these things, why would it be that someone would want to pick on the poor Masons? You know, for a lot of people, they just think the Masons, I think I probably fell into this category of thinking the Masons was just a club for big boy scouts. You know, with all their degrees, and you know, they said big Eagle Boy Scouts. Now, why would anybody want to pick on the poor Masons? You know, there's a book that's entitled "The Deadly Deception" by Pastor James Shaw, who was a former 33 33rd degree Mason himself. And that is really, in light of what most people, how most people look at Masonry today, the majority of the population, that is a very good title for a book, or a very good title or description for what's going on in Masonry today. The deadly or a deadly deception. You know, Masons, when you really get to know who and what they are, certainly are not Eagle Scouts. Far from it. First of all, let me just mention that they really almost have, you know, everybody looks at the Masons as being such a benevolent, charitable type group. But you know, that is almost just nothing but a charitable facade. As reported in the Orlando Sentinel, in 1984, only 1% of the donations made as a result of the Shrine Circus went to Shrine hospitals. 1% in 1984. The Shrine Temples kept the rest of the $17.5 million that they received from the Shrine Circus. Now, I'm not here to say that they aren't involved in some good things. And the 1% that went to the Shrine hospitals that were used for children with diseases and deformities and so on, that was good. And there's other things that they do that are certainly good. But I don't think that they're near as good as they portray themselves to the rest of the world as being, even in their benevolent acts. And I think this report proves it, that only 1% of those donations even went to the purpose that it was supposed to go to. What about Masonry being Christian? Well, I think we're going to prove in this message, and this is probably as far as we will get in this message, but we want to prove in the rest of this message and show that Masonry certainly is not Christian, in spite of today many Masons claiming to be Christians. First of all, I think we need to ask, is Masonry even a religion? Let me read to you, and throughout this message I want to again use documentation from the Masons themselves, as I have in past messages regarding other things. I want to use documentation from Masons themselves about what they say themselves about themselves and whatever question I may raise. Let them do the speaking rather than myself, because I'm certainly myself no authority on Masonry, but I think the Masons themselves certainly should be authorities on what they believe and teach. Well, the question again, is Masonry even a religion? It's funny how it's very interesting to look at the answer to that question. What we want to do, what I'm going to do, and many of my quotes and many of what I'm going to read in this message and next Sunday's message is going to come from Morals and Dogma. Now, let me introduce Morals and Dogma to you. It was written in 1871 by Albert Pike. Albert Pike was the Scottish Rite Masonry's grand philosopher and former grand commander. Okay? One of the big boys. The purpose of this book, known as Morals and Dogma, some of you are familiar with it, some of you may not be, is really found right on the title page. The title page reads, Morals and Dogma of the Ancient and Accepted Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, prepared for the Supreme Council of the 33rd Degree for the Southern Jurisdiction of the United States and published by its authority. What's the purpose of this? It was prepared for the Supreme Council of the 33rd Degree of the Scottish Rite. It's described by many Masons as the basis for Masonic philosophy, given to each initiate into the fourth degree. By the time they've gone through the first three degrees and as they're initiated into the fourth degree, every Mason is given this book. Why? Because it is the basis for all Masonic philosophy, period. It is, as stated and written by the Grand Commander of 1948, it is, quote, a secret book not for publication. That should remind you of another set of books that are not to be for publication either. This whole statement sounds like it was written for another whole set of books that we're aware of. But again, he said it is, quote, a secret book not for publication. In case a Mason dies or otherwise leaves the council, the book should be returned to the Supreme Council or else destroyed, end quote. In other words, I'm not supposed to have this book. But there are a few that have hard to get as they may be. There are a few out there that are still available. And as you will see, you will find out why. Much the same as the Talmud today. You start reading what's in here and you find out why they do not want someone like myself to have this in my hands, as we will see as we continue. Well, is it a religion? Is Masonry a religion? Now that I've introduced to you what I'm going to be doing a lot of quoting from, let me read what Morals and Dogma has to say about that. In the chapter concerning the degree of the illustrious elect of the 15, on page 161, we find these words. It says, Masonry is not a religion. There's your answer. Or is that the answer? Well, in the illustrious elect of the 15, at least that sentence states that Masonry is not a religion. But let's read on a little bit further what it says here. It states Masonry is not a religion, at least at this spot in Morals and Dogma. But it goes on, immediately following, it says, he who makes of it a religious belief falsifies and then denaturalizes it. That's interesting, especially in light of what we're going to continue to read. The Brahmin, the Jew, the Mohammedan, the Catholic, the Protestant, each professing his peculiar religion, sanctioned by the laws, by time and by climate, must needs retain it, and cannot have two religions. For the social and sacred laws, adapted to the usages, manners, and prejudices of particular countries, are the work of men. Now again, that's one paragraph there. That all seems to say, no, Masonry is not a religion. But let's continue. It says, but Masonry teaches and has preserved in their purity the cardinal tenets of the old primitive faith, which underline and are the foundation of all religions. All that ever existed have had a basis of truth, and all have overlaid that truth with errors. A little bit later, it says, Masonry is the universal morality which is suitable to the inhabitants of every clime, to the man of every creed. In one paragraph, it states, no, Masonry is not a religion. In the next paragraph, the definition given is that of a religion. Let's see if it doesn't say more about that in other places. Let's go on to the degree of the Royal Arch of Solomon. Let me read from pages 213 to 214. Now, remember that this same man, Albert Pike, in this other degree, said that, point blank, said that Masonry is not a religion. Now listen to what he says in the Royal Arch of Solomon. Page 213, he says, every Masonic lodge is a temple of religion, and its teachings are instruction in religion. For here are inculcated disinterestedness, affection, toleration, devotedness, patriotism, truth, a generous sympathy with those who suffer and mourn, pity for the fallen, mercy for the erring, relief for those in want, faith, hope, and charity. Here we meet as brethren to learn to know and love each other. Here we greet each other gladly, are lenient to each other's faults, regardful of each other's feelings, ready to relieve each other's wants. This is the true religion revealed to the ancient patriarchs, which Masonry has taught for many centuries and which it will continue to teach as long as time endures. First says, no, it's not a religion. Then it describes itself in religious terms. And then later it says, it's a religion. Well, it certainly is. There can be no question about it. The Encyclopedia of Freemasonry by Albert Mackey, which is considered by most Masons their highest and best authority, go on to prove the very same thing. It is indeed a religion. Listen to what Mackey says in the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry under religion. Quote, it says, look at its ancient landmarks, its sublime ceremonies, its profound symbols and allegories, all inculcating religious doctrine, commanding religious observance, and teaching religious truth. And who can deny that it is eminently a religious institution. Masonry, then, is indeed a religious institution, and on this ground mainly, if not alone, should the religious Mason defend it. End quote. I don't think it can be denied, as you read Morals and Dogma, and you see the statements that are made, that Masonry today is just not some club that's joined by the average citizen in America. Masonry, in itself, bottom line, is religious. There can be no question about that. The question is, what religion is it? Is it Christian? or is it some other religion? Well, let's settle that for once and for all. And yet, and let's use their quotes to answer that question. Quoting again from the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry by Mackey, on page 618, it says this, quote, "The religion of Freemasonry is not Christian," end quote. Couldn't be stated any clearer. It says the religion of Freemasonry is not Christian. On page 439, it states, quote, "If Masonry were simply a Christian institution, the Jew and Muslim, the Brahmin and the Buddhist could not conscientiously partake of its illumination, but its universality is its boast. In its language, citizens of every nation may convene. At its altars, men of all religions may kneel. To its creed, disciples of every faith may subscribe," end quote. Except, I may add, those who proclaim to be Christians. Because everything stated in that quote is against what the Bible teaches about Christianity. Christianity is the one religion that is exclusive and will not allow the other religions to join with it. It's very clearly in 2 Corinthians 6, do not participate, that's the wrong quote from the wrong place. It says, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. Unbelievers in who? Unbelievers in Yahshua the Messiah. Do not be unequally yoked with those who cannot claim to be Christian, who would claim to be followers of Zoroaster or followers of Buddha or followers of the Talmud. It says, do not be unequally yoked. That statement excludes, not only is it says if Masonry were simply a Christian institution. No, it's not. Just simply not a Christian institution. It's not Christian, period. If Masonry allows the others to come to their altars who do not believe in the Christ. The Kentucky Monitor, another organ for the Masons, the Kentucky Monitor on the fellowcraft degree, page 95, makes this statement. It says, quote, "Masonry makes no profession of Christianity," end quote. Well, isn't that interesting? Because many Masons still claim to be Christians. Deceived or whatever, they may claim to be Christians, but Masonry is not Christian by its own mouth. If not Christian, then the question, of course, is what religion is it? Well, let's see if morals and dogma can't help us in discerning what religion it is, if indeed it isn't Christian. Let me read from the degree of the fellowcraft, on page 22 and 23. Just a couple short sentences here. It says, on page 22, it says, "Masonry, the successor of the mysteries, still shows the ancient manner of teaching." And notice here that it correlates Masonry with the mysteries. It goes on in page 23. It says, "Though Masonry is identical with the ancient mysteries, it is so only in this qualified sense that it presents but an imperfect image of their brilliancy and ruins only of their grandeur." Notice it says that Masonry is the same as these ancient mysteries, but not quite as good. It's trying to still attain to those. It elevates the ancient mysteries, and it says we're one and the same, though we're not quite to the extent of brilliancy that they were at one time. Well, the question then is, if Masonry is equal or synonymous with the ancient mysteries, what are the ancient mysteries? Let's go back to the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry by Mackey, which describes the ancient mysteries as, quote, "the secret worship rites of the pagan gods." Each of the pagan gods had, besides the public and open, a secret worship paid to him, to which none were admitted but those who had been selected by preparatory ceremonies called initiation, end quote. Isn't it interesting that Masonry has their initiations into each of their different degrees of Freemasonry? Notice also here, too, that it says that it describes these mysteries not only as the worship of pagan gods, but the secret worship of pagan gods, and goes on to say each of the pagan gods had, besides the public and open, a secret worship paid to him. we find these words. It says, Masonry is not a religion. There's your answer. Or is that the answer? Well, in the illustrious Lect of the 15, at least that sentence states that Masonry is not a religion. But let's read on a little bit further what it says here. It states Masonry is not a religion, at least at this spot in Morals and Dogma. But it goes on, immediately following, it says, He who makes of it a religious belief falsifies and then denaturalizes it. That's interesting, especially in light of what we're going to continue to read. The Brahmin, the Jew, the Mohammedan, the Catholic, the Protestant, each professing his peculiar religion, sanctioned by the laws, by time and by climate, must needs retain it, and cannot have two religions. For the social and sacred laws, adapted to the usages, manners, and prejudices of particular countries, are the work of men. Now again, that's one paragraph there. That all seems to say, no, Masonry is not a religion. But let's continue. It says, but Masonry teaches and has preserved in their purity the cardinal tenets of the old primitive faith, which underline and are the foundation of all religions. All that ever existed have had a basis of truth, and all have overlaid that truth with errors. A little bit later, it says, Masonry is the universal morality which is suitable to the inhabitants of every clime, to the man of every creed. In one paragraph it states, no, Masonry is not a religion. In the next paragraph, the definition given is that of a religion. Let's see if it doesn't say more about that in other places. Let's go on to the degree of the Royal Arch of Solomon. Let me read from pages 213 to 214. Now, remember that this same man, Albert Pike, in this other degree, said that, point blank, said that Masonry is not a religion. Now listen to what he says in the Royal Arch of Solomon. Page 213, he says, every Masonic lodge is a temple of religion, and its teachings are instruction in religion. For here are inculcated disinterestedness, affection, toleration, devotedness, patriotism, truth, a generous sympathy with those who suffer and mourn, pity for the fallen, mercy for the erring, relief for those in want, faith, hope, and charity. Here we meet as brethren to learn to know and love each other. Here we greet each other gladly, are lenient to each other's faults, regardful of each other's feelings, ready to relieve each other's wants. This is the true religion revealed to the ancient patriarchs, which Masonry has taught for many centuries and which it will continue to teach as long as time endures. First says, no, it's not a religion. Then it describes itself in religious terms. And then later it says, it's a religion. Well, it certainly is. There can be no question about it. The Encyclopedia of Freemasonry by Albert Mackey, which is considered by most Masons their highest and best authority, go on to prove the very same thing. It is indeed a religion. Listen to what Mackey says in the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry under religion. Quote, it says, look at its ancient landmarks, its sublime ceremonies, its profound symbols and allegories, all inculcating religious doctrine, commanding religious observance, and teaching religious truth. And who can deny that it is eminently a religious institution. Masonry, then, is indeed a religious institution, and on this ground mainly, if not alone, should the religious Mason defend it. End quote. I don't think it'd be denied as you read Morals and Dogma and you see the statements that are made that Masonry today is just not some club that's joined by the average citizen in America. Masonry in itself, bottom line, is religious. There can be no question about that. The question is, what religion is it? Is it Christian? Or is it some other religion? Well, let's settle that for once and for all. And let's use their quotes to answer that question. Quoting again from the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry by Mackey, on page 618, it says this. Quote, the religion of Freemasonry is not Christian, end quote. Couldn't be stated any clearer. Says the religion of Freemasonry is not Christian. On page 439 it states, quote, "If Masonry were simply a Christian institution, the Jew and Muslim, the Brahmin and the Buddhist could not conscientiously partake of its illumination, but its universality is its boast. In its language, citizens of every nation may convene. At its altars, men of all religions may kneel. To its creed, disciples of every faith may subscribe," end quote. Except, I may add, those who proclaim to be Christians. Because everything stated in that quote is against what the Bible teaches about Christianity. Christianity is the one religion that is exclusive and will not allow the other religions to join with it. It's very clearly in 2 Corinthians 6, do not participate, that's the wrong quote from the wrong place. It says, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. Unbelievers in who? Unbelievers in Yahshua the Messiah. Do not be unequally yoked with those who cannot claim to be Christian, who would claim to be followers of Zoroaster or followers of Buddha or followers of the Talmud. It says, do not be unequally yoked. That statement excludes. Not only is it says if Masonry were simply a Christian institution. No, it's not just simply not a Christian institution. It's not Christian, period. If Masonry allows the others to come to their altar who do not believe in the Christ. The Kentucky Monitor, another organ for the Masons, the Kentucky Monitor on the fellowcraft degree, page 95, makes this statement. It says, quote, "Masonry makes no profession of Christianity," end quote. Well, isn't that interesting? Because many Masons still claim to be Christians. Deceived or whatever, they may claim to be Christians, but Masonry is not Christian by its own mouth. If not Christian, then the question, of course, is what religion is it? Well, let's see if morals and dogma can't help us in discerning what religion it is, if indeed it isn't Christian. Let me read from the degree of the fellowcraft on page 22 and 23. Page 22 and 23, just a couple short sentences here. It says, on page 22, it says, "Masonry, the successor of the mysteries, still shows the ancient manner of teaching." Now notice here that it correlates Masonry with the mysteries. It goes on in page 23. It says, though Masonry is identical with the ancient mysteries, it is so only in this qualified sense that it presents but an imperfect image of their brilliancy and ruins only of their grandeur. Notice it says that Masonry is the same as these ancient mysteries, but not quite as good. It's trying to still attain to those. It elevates the ancient mysteries, and it says we're one and the same, though we're not quite to the extent of brilliancy that they were at one time. Well, the question then is, if Masonry is equal or synonymous with the ancient mysteries, what are the ancient mysteries? Let's go back to the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry by Mackey, which describes the ancient mysteries as, quote, "the secret worship rites of the pagan gods." Each of the pagan gods had, besides the public and open, a secret worship paid to him, to which none were admitted but those who had been selected by preparatory ceremonies called initiation, end quote. Isn't it interesting that Masonry has their initiations into each of their different degrees of Freemasonry? Notice also here, too, that it says that it describes these mysteries not only as the worship of pagan gods, but the secret worship of pagan gods. And goes on to say, each of the pagan gods had, besides the public and open, a secret worship paid to him. Keeping in mind that it's already stated that it's not Christian, it's already stated that it is the worship, or its religion is the worship of pagan gods, and that it's a secret worship. And now contrast that with what Yahshua said here in John 18, in verses 19 and 20. It says, "The high priest therefore questioned Yahshua about his disciples and about his teaching." Listen to what Yahshua has to say. He says, "I have spoken openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews came together, and I spoke nothing in secret." Yes, masonry is a religion of secrecy. And yet Joshua said that his was out in the open for anyone to hear and understand. And when they were about to kill him, he said, Why do you come to me in the dark? Why do you come to me out here in this garden? Or didn't I speak openly before you at all times? You could have taken me there. No, but those who are behind this religion of masonry are those who do things in secret, in the dark. It goes on in Morals and Dogma, under the degree of Chief of the Tabernacle, page 352. It says, among most of the ancient nations there was, in addition to their public worship, a private one styled the Mystery, to which those only were admitted who had been prepared by certain ceremonies called initiations. The most widely disseminated of the ancient worships, now it's going to go on to explain who these pagan gods. It's already named that it was the worship, or the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry identifies the Mysteries, the worship of the pagan gods. Now it's going to even tell us who these pagan gods are. It says, the most widely disseminated of the ancient worships were those of Isis, Orpheus, Dionysus, Ceres, and Mithras. And let's keep in mind that those were all worshippers of the sun. Many barbarous nations received the knowledge of the Mysteries in honor of these divinities from the Egyptians. You know, we are given, based on what the Masons hear, what Albert Pike described Masonry as far as a religion, described through the definition of Mysteries as being the worship of the pagan gods and describing who the gods were here that the Mysteries were involved with, we're given a description of that worship, the worship of the Masons today in the Scriptures. Now, obviously, again, just as communism is not found, that word is not found in the Bible, it certainly is described in the Bible. In the same way, obviously, we're not going to find the word Mason in the Bible, but it certainly is described in the Bible. Turn with me, if you will, to Ezekiel chapter 8. Ezekiel chapter 8 and verses 14 through 16, we will find a description of the Masonic religious ritual that is carried on daily throughout this country and throughout the world. Listen to what it says here. Now keep in mind that the Masons' religion is described as the Mysteries. The Mysteries have been identified as the worship of the pagan gods, and the pagan gods that are described as a part of those Mysteries, or as the gods of the Mysteries, were gods of sun worship. Okay? Now, listen to Ezekiel chapter 8 in light of that. Verse 14, it says, then he brought me, God is bringing Ezekiel here, he says, then he brought me with in a vision, I'm sure this is happening. He says, then he brought me to the entrance of the gate of Yahweh's house, which was toward the north. And behold, women were sitting there weeping for Tammuz. In verse 15, and he said to me, do you see this, son of man? Yet you will see still greater abominations than these. Verse 16, then he brought me into the inner court of Yahweh's house. And behold, at the entrance of the temple of 20, excuse me, and behold, at the entrance of the temple of Yahweh, between the porch and the altar were about 25 men with their backs to the temple of Yahweh. I think that's significant. Their backs, instead of facing and worshiping God at His temple, their backs were to the temple of Yahweh, and their faces toward the east. And they were prostrating themselves eastward toward the sun. Now, it doesn't take long in the study of Masonry, if you get into their works, their readings, to find out that Masonry is not only a worship of the Mysteries, not only a worship of the pagan gods, but it is a worship of the sun. And isn't it interesting, if you go into any Masonic temple throughout the world, their temple faces the east, in worship of the sun. It is described in the Scriptures. It was what God said. God, here in this vision to Ezekiel, he goes through the different apostasies that Israel was involved in at the time, and he ends up by saying, there's one thing that's even worse. Here's the worst of it. They turn their back on me and the worship of me, and they're now facing the sun in idolatrous worship. And it started then, and has been carried on and is being carried on today in the Masonic temples throughout the world. You know, if masonry is a religion, then it also must have a god that it worships. Makes sense. If masonry is a religion, then it must have a god that it worships. Certainly, if it's a Christian religion, then that Christian god would be Yahweh Yahshua. Would it not? Certainly would. Well, let's find out. If again, masonry is religion, it must have a god that it worships. Well, what is that god? Let's see if it doesn't tell us itself. Let's go back to Morals and Dogma. And I thought it was interesting, one of the books that I was reviewing for this message and the one following happened to write out, it had Morals and Dogma, and instead of putting Morals and Dogma down each time, it just took the first letters of each of those three words. Take those three words and take the first three letters, and what do you have? Morals and Dogma, mad. Boy, if anything's mad, you've got to read Morals and Dogma, and you'll find something that's mad. Mad in the sense of demented. Let's read mad. Let's read Morals and Dogma and what it says about their God. Reading from the degree of the Prince of Mercy or Scottish Trinitarianism on page 524. Listen to what it says. 524, under the Prince of Mercy or Scottish Trinitarian. To every Mason there is a God. They have a God. To every Mason there is a God. One, supreme, infinite in goodness, wisdom, foresight, justice, and benevolence. Creator, disposer, and preserver of all things. How or by what intermediates he creates and acts, and in what way he unfolds and manifests himself, Masonry leaves to creeds and religions to inquire. Notice here. Masons themselves, Albert Pike, one of their authoritative leaders, says that Masons have a God. Can be no question about that. Seems like religions have gods. Well, what's that? What is that God described by the Masons? How about Carl H. Clotty in the Introduction to Freemasonry? On page 38, he says, quote, "In his private petitions, a man may petition God or Jehovah, Allah, or Buddha, Muhammad, or Jesus. He may call upon the God of Israel or the first great cause." Now, did you notice that it says that they can call upon these gods, however they want to call upon them, in their private petitions? He goes on to say, in the Masonic Lodge, he hears petition to the great architect of the universe, finding his own deity under that name. 100 paths may wind upward around a mountain. At the top they meet. Now again, that statement is exclusive or excludes Christianity from its worship. There may be some who claim to be Christians who claim to worship their God the God of Christianity under the title of Great Architect of the Universe. But it cannot be based on their own statements if anyone understands what the Scriptures teach about the exclusiveness of Christianity. It's impossible. You know, if you really read what's being said there, it sounds a whole lot like Eastern philosophy, does it not? Or the Eastern religions. You know, some people are wondering, how in the world did we get to the state where we are in America where we have Eastern religions flourishing? Christianity being denied in the public schools, and yet Eastern religions being allowed to be taught. How in the world?